ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ॐ
नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ॐ
नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय This is 12 to 16, so I'll read from text 12. Sukadev Sri Suka Uvacha Tasyetam Vashamam Nasya Prahrado Bhagavat Priya Ajagama Kuru Shreshta Rakta Patir Ivotita. Sukadev Goswami said, O best of the Kurus, while Bali Maharaj was describing his fortunate position in this way, the most dear devotee of the Lord, Prahlad Maharaj, appeared there, like the moon rising in the nighttime. Then Bali Maharaj saw his grandfather, Prahlad Maharaj, the most fortunate personality, whose dark body resembled black ointment for the eyes. His tall, elegant figure was dressed in yellow garments. He had long arms, and his beautiful eyes were like the petals of a lotus. He was very dear and pleasing to everyone. Being bound by the ropes of Varuna, Bali Maharaj could not offer befitting respect to Prahlad Maharaj, as he had before. Rather, he simply offered respectful obeisances with his head, his eyes being inundated with tears and his face lowered in shame. Purport. Since Bali Maharaj had been arrested by Lord Vamanadeva, he was certainly to be considered an offender. Bali Maharaj seriously felt that he was an offender to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Certainly, Prahlad Maharaj would not like this. Therefore, Bali Maharaj was ashamed and hung his head. When the great personality Prahlad Maharaj saw that the Supreme Lord was sitting there, surrounded and worshipped by his intimate associates like Sunanda, he was overwhelmed with tears of jubilation. Approaching the Lord and falling to the ground, he offered obeisances to the Lord with his head. In text 16, Sri Prahlad Uvacha.
Sri Prahlad Uvacha.
Tvayaiva.
Tvayaiva.
Dattam.
Dattam.
Padam.
Padam.
Aindram.
Aindram.
Urjitam.
Urjitam.
Ritam.
Ritam.
Tad.
Tad.
Evadya.
Evadya.
Tataiva.
Tataiva.
Shobanam.
Shobanam.
Manye,
Manye
Mahan,
Mahan
Asya,
Asya
Krito, Hyanugraho,
Hyanugraho
Vibramshito,
Vibramshito
Yach,
Yach
Shriya,
Shriya
Atma,
Atma
Mohanat,
Mohanat
Shri Prahlada Uvacha,
Shri Prahlada Uvacha
Tvayaiva dattam paramaindram urjitam
Tvayaiva dattam paramaindram urjitam
Ritam tare vadya tathaiva shobanam
Ritam tare vadya tathaiva shobanam
Manye mahan asya krito hyanugraho
Manye mahan asya krito hyanugraho
Vibramshito yachtriya atma mohanat
Vibramshito yachtriya atma mohanat
Shri Prahlada Uvacha
Shri Prahlada Uvacha
Prahlad Maharaj said
Prahlad Maharaj said
Toya
Toya
By your lordship
By your lordship
Eva
Eva
Indeed
Indeed
Dattam
Dattam
Which has been given
Which has been given
Padam
Padam
This position
This position
Aindram
Aindram
Of the king of heaven
Of the heaven
Urjitam
Urjitam
Very very great
Very very great
Ritam,
Ritam
has been taken away.
Has been taken away.
Tat,
Tat
that.
That.
Eva,
Eva.
Indeed.
Indeed.
Adya,
Adya.
Today.
Today.
Tata,
Tata.
As.
As.
Eva,
Eva.
Indeed.
Indeed.
Shobanam.
Shobanam.
Beautiful.
Beautiful.
Manye.
Manye.
I consider.
I consider.
Mahan.
Mahan.
Very great.
Very great.
Asya.
Asya.
Of him.
Of him.
Bali Maharaj.
Bali Maharaj.
Krita,
Krita
has been done by you.
Has been done by you.
He,
he
indeed.
Indeed.
Anugraha,
Anugraha.
Mercy.
Mercy.
Vibramshita.
Vibramshita.
Being bereft of.
Being bereft of.
Yat.
Yat.
Because.
Because.
Shriya,
Shriya,
from that opulence.
From that opulence.
Atma Mohanat,
Atma Mohanat,
which was covering the process of self-realization.
Which was covering the process of self-realization.
Translation. Prahlad Maharaj said, "My Lord, it is your Lordship who gave this Bali the very great opulence of the post of Heavenly King, and now today it is you who have taken it all away. I think you have acted with equal beauty in both ways, because his exalted position as King of Heaven was putting him in the darkness of ignorance. You have done him a very merciful favor by taking away all his opulence." Purport. It is said, Yasyaham anubrinami harishye tadhanam shanaihi. Srimad Bhagavatam 10.88.8. It is by the mercy of the Lord that one gets all material opulence. But if such material opulence causes one to become puffed up and forget the process of self-realization, the Lord certainly takes all the opulence away. The Lord bestows mercy upon his devotee by helping him find out his constitutional position. For that purpose, the Lord is always ready to help the devotee in every way. But material opulence is sometimes dangerous because it diverts one's attention to false prestige by giving one the impression that he is the owner and master of everything he surveys, although actually this is not the fact. To protect the devotee from such a misunderstanding, the Lord, showing special mercy, sometimes takes away his material possessions. Yasyaham anugrinami harishye tadhanam shanai. So we see this theme coming up again and again here in this story, where the aspect of the Lord taking away one's material opulences for the benefit of the devotee, then that is it's a matter of proximity. It's a matter of that the Lord is always interested in the benefit of the devotee. He's always thinking how the devotee will advance, how he'll progress. So then, if receiving material opulence will be progressive for the devotee, then that will be there. Because with that opulence, then this wealth can be used for performing so many kinds of services for the Lord. But if it doesn't give that benefit, if instead one is becoming proud, like we see Bali Maharaj has been, then by taking it away, then it becomes progressive. The main thing is that we should progress on devotional service. Otherwise, if we get distracted, that's not good, because the material world is full of distractions. So the difficulty is in this world that people are very much easily distracted, because that's why we came here. We came here actually to be distracted. That's our sole purpose in coming. It was how to be distracted from serving the Lord. So then we have a natural affinity for all things of this world. And in the time that we have been here, we have done everything. Whatever there is to do, it's been done. Every species of life has been in. Whatever variety of situation, it's been gone through. So that means we've had some attraction for anything that's here in the material world at some time. You know, the most wonderful and the most terrible. We've had been attracted by all of this. Therefore, everything in this world poses as a serious obstacle to our devotional service. So if it's not an obstacle, then there's no problem. If we, at this particular time, the desires are such, the purity is such, we're not attracted by certain things or by anything, then that's very good. But if there's anything that we become attracted by, then the tendency is Krishna will remove the situation that will create that attraction. Because attraction means we always hear that someone has to do something, someone needs to be inspired. If they're not inspired, they lose their inspiration. They're doing something, nobody cares, or people create obstacles for them. Then the natural tendency is to stop doing that activity because we're not inspired. So we can see is if we look at this principle, it's a very excellent principle. If somebody's doing something they shouldn't be doing, you create obstacles in doing that, and then naturally they'll become frustrated with it. Right? Because the whole idea is if you get some result, you get inspired to do more. You get a bad result, you're not inspired. You're doing an activity, and as long as the results are coming nice, or at least the prospect of it coming nice is there, we're inspired, we go on. But as soon as we see the prospect isn't there, or it's going badly, then immediately we have second thoughts. Should I be doing this, that? So this is just how the mentality is working. So then Krishna, he uses this to our advantage. Therefore, Prahlad Maharaj is mentioning is that by your grace you gave him everything, because he was doing very nicely, he was worshipping his guru, he was, you know, all these things. And it's also the desire. Living entity wants Krishna, naturally. The parent likes to provide what the child wants. You know, likes to take care. It may not always be the best, but they try to please the child. So Krishna is trying to please. But at the same time, as you can see that now, as King of Heaven, and having so much opulence, then it is not good for his devotional life. It's not good for his spiritual life. He's not remembering him. He's becoming proud. He's becoming conditioned by this opulence. And so because of that, then by taking it away, one remembers like this. It's said in this purport, Bhagavatam 10.88.8, that this is the Lord speaking. He speaks this verse. Yudhishthira Maharaj asks about that we see that Lord Shiva, he is very poor. He has nothing. He sits under a tree. Right? And that's all he has. But those who worship him are so wealthy, so rich. While Krishna, the goddess of fortune, is his consort. And there's unlimited of these goddesses of fortune. So there's unlimited wealth. But Krishna's devotees, they all live under a tree. So he says, why is this? So then he relates that, yes, this question was also asked before. And so then he starts to relate this point. Is that because it's on two levels. Shiva is giving material opulence. Krishna doesn't give material opulence. He gives spiritual opulence. He takes away material opulence, gives spiritual opulence. So in the process of taking away the material opulence, it looks like the devotee is becoming poor. But actually, it's not. So then, as an example of this, then Krishna is saying that he comes, you know, with every Paritranaya sadhunam. I can never remember the part about the demons. It's like too close to home, right? I always forget that part. Yeah. You know, it's like, we're sadhus, right? We remember that part, but actually we're demons. That part I forget, right? It's like when somebody be getting initiation, they come up and Prabhupada would say, what are the four regulative principles? And they name three and they can't remember the fourth one. And then when they finally remember it, then Prabhupada would say, don't do that one. So like that. So then the part about the demons in that verse, I always forget. So he's come to, associate with the devotees, establish Dharma, and get rid of the demons. So then someone may say, but, you know, isn't there another way he can go about it? I mean, so many ways you can do something. Why does he choose this way? Why is it in trouble does he choose to give mercy? Why in that situation? Why not give mercy in a nice situation? Why do you have to give mercy in a troubled situation? So then Vishwanath Chakrabarti Thakur, then he mentions that we see just as the sunrise is appreciated in darkness, right? Or a nice lamp is appreciated when it's dark, not in the middle of the day. Or when you're very, very hungry, then you appreciate a nice meal. So in the same ways, the Lord's mercy can be appreciated when there is adversity. It naturally goes. Because if everything's so wonderful, then some more mercy is, yeah, okay, you know. It's like you have $1 million, you know, somebody gives you $100, so what? You know, okay, yeah, it's another, a little bit more. Yeah, stick it in the corner. But if there's nothing, you have nothing and someone gives you $100, oh, very nice. Right? So that is the point that is being made. That's why we see this verse come, this verse is quoted, and this point is just coming up again and again and again and again. Because the tendency is that we turn to Krishna consciousness because of trouble. We want to get rid of the trouble. It's natural for the living entity. You want to get rid of trouble. Because the living entity is not accustomed to difficulty, right? In the spiritual world, there's no material difficulty. So it's foreign to the nature of the living entity. So we turn to God to get rid of this. So we expect it to go away. So we see it does go away. But at the same time, as if by going away, then we forget Krishna. Then the point is to remember Krishna. That's more important. The living entity doesn't know this. In the beginning, they just turn to God. They just fix everything so the material world's nice for me. But then with time, because that won't satisfy the living entity, then Krishna then makes it so that we become frustrated with material endeavor, material life, material desire, like this. So with that frustration, then we see the living entity is able to then turn his attention actually to Krishna and get rid of the whole problem in the material world. So the difficulty is in this changeover. When we're changing from expecting that approaching God in religious activities, pious activities, or devotional activities should give good material result, which they will. They'll give unlimited. But that's not the actual goal, purpose of religion. Purpose of religion is to remember God, become God conscious, become absorbed in associating with God. That will give happiness. It means the soul wants to be happy, so the real nature of the soul is happiness in the spiritual world, not here. But we're so conditioned to the material life, we see it goes away, things are happening, so many wonderful things happen, and we were saved from so many things. That's good, that's Krishna's doing. But at the same time is, if that we don't appreciate Krishna also when it's nice, then it should be some more trouble, because then we turn to him when there was trouble in the beginning, we'll turn to him again. Like that. So the whole that in that transformation from understanding that we're approaching God for material purposes to approaching God for spiritual purposes, sometimes then we may doubt that something's wrong here. Why is it I'm having trouble? Why these things are going on? You know, these things like that. So that is what is being given here. This is, you know, this point is being made. And it's the Lord, what's very important is pointed out in all this pastime here and these purports that are connected to, it's the Lord himself that is doing it. The Lord himself gives the opulence, the Lord himself is taking it away. Like this. It's not going on in another fashion. So Krishna is actually personally doing it. That's why then Prahlad Maharaj mentions, in a wonderful way you're giving it, in a wonderful way you're taking it away. Like that. It's not being done into some other thing. It's not material misfortune. It's simply the situation to correct the improper consciousness. So Prabhupada mentions here is that the Lord is always bestowing his mercy so the living entity can understand what his constitutional position is. So naturally, if you're endeavoring in one thing, you have two choices, and you try one and you're not getting a good result, the natural thing is to try the other. So we have two choices, the constitutional nature or the conditional nature. So when we try the conditional and it doesn't work, the natural thing would be, if we know about it, to turn to the alternative, the constitutional, which is the actual natural. It's the actual. So then he's always trying to help, and he's always ready to help in any way. So if we turn to him and really want something, then we can get it. But when we say we want it, we have to be prepared to be tested for it also. That's part of the thing. We say we want something, that means we have to be ready to come forward for that. Like let's say we want to qualify for a certain position or activity, then we have to be willing to be tested. Can you actually do this activity? Are you qualified for it? And there may be something. It's not that just because we asked or we wanted, then it just automatically comes. There's some test. There's something is always happening. So in the same way as we say, Krishna, we want to surrender, I want to be your devotee, it'll be checked. Because then by checking, you can see where the weakness is. And then Krishna then can work on those places. And he can show you that this is where the weakness is. You say you want to surrender, but you only want to surrender here, not over there. Right? So then you makes us aware of those things. Our attachments, our distractions, all these things. So then it's, we see it's a very, very nice thing. Any questions on this? Yes.
If we examine Srila Prabhupada's life, there was a period where he took this Yasya 111 verse as being kind of a guiding light for what was going on in this process of disentangling from grahastha life and ultimately going to the bottom class and taking sannyas. But then we see that when he finally came to the United States, there seemed to be a different force at play, maybe kind of Krishna's direction. And that's the full implementation of Yukta Vairagya. And it seems that the Yashaham Anugrahami verse, you know, may be applicable. Now, first, we're dealing with a Mahabharata, so the example may be there that could be. This is back to the Thakur and Sharanagati is taking the, the position of the condition so that to show us how to do it. But it seems that the Yashaham Anugrahami verse, where the Lord takes away, that he shows his mercy in that way, when full realization of Yukta Vairagya or realization of that principle is not there. But when it's fully there, that then the Lord is super pleased by that. And you can just see how Srila Prabhupada was just showered with all types of material, so-called material facility, but what he was actually doing was spiritualizing it, was Krishnaizing everything. And so then he just got showered with an unbelievable facility. You know, within the 12 years that he was pushing Iskcon all over the world.
Yeah. Means that'll come up, that's the other half of the, means that's the next point in this pastime. Means it'll come up, I'm not sure how many verses, but means Bali Maharaj has given his opinion. You know, they discussed the material situation, now Prahlad Maharaj is giving his opinion on it. And then after everybody's said everything, then Vamanadeva will give his opinion. And at that time he will say that about this verse, that this Yasyaham, is that this is the first point. Prabhupada mentioned that in the previous purport. This is the first step of his mercy. So the first step is to take away so we surrender. And once one is surrendered, that one doesn't become proud or puffed up by the material energy, then he gives even more. So he says the real test of the mercy is someone has so much opulence and they're Krishna conscious. He says that's actually the test. That's the real test. Because it's natural that if someone's a little bit thoughtful, when they don't have anything, they'll be humble. And they'll turn to the Lord. That's natural. That's a natural, pious position. You know, demoniac is you lose things and you get all very annoyed like that. And because, you know, your own endeavors are frustrated. But the first is that it's taken away and one surrenders to the Lord. But the reason it had to be taken away is because of that attraction and pride, and, you know, there would be something, one is enjoying the ghee on the hands. You know, one is working with ghee, so ghee sticks to the hands, so that's our ghee, right? So as long as that's going on, then naturally at some point that will need to be taken away, so there's complete surrender. Then the relationship deepens. But once it's on that platform, the unlimited opulence can be there, and there's no problem. So therefore, we see what you had described there is like a full manifestation of this, the principles of this pastime that are being manifest like that. But it's true, is that the first stage is when we have material attachment, the second stage is when there is no material attachment. Though even sometimes, just to show example, I mean, well, not to just say example, I mean, it's always shown like that. We see Yudhishthira also, they have so much, then they lose, then they get more. So when they depend upon the Lord, how much they get is always more than what has been lost. Like that. But if you're thinking, well, I'll just stick to it because I'll get more, then, you know, then it will just keep going. Because the next verse after this yes-yaham is that when the person tries to get more, he frustrates that attempt also. Not only does he take away what you've gotten, when you try to get more again, he'll frustrate that. Then you'll surrender. Then when you surrender, then he can give. So it's like, if you want, you can't have. If you don't want, you can have. That's the problem. So for us, it's a problem. For Krishna, it's nice. Right? Because Krishna has everything. Everything is his. It is him. So therefore, to be in the situation where it appears he doesn't have, for him gives pleasure. Right? We see that all the obstacles in his pastimes, you know, in Vrindavan, they give him pleasure. Because anyway, everything goes perfectly for him anyway. So by the yoga maya, then it creates an environment in which it appears it's not going. He wants to, you know, play with the cowherd boys, and Mother Jashoda is saying, oh, you got to come home and eat, and he doesn't care. And then she comes out and says, what is this, you're a street kid or what? You know, Nanda Baba's, you know, waiting until you come before he eats. Oh, like this, you know, so he creates situations. He wants to be with them, or he wants to be with the gopis, but then he has to go. Like this, so many difficulties are there. For him, there's no difficulty. He creates these because it gives him pleasure. And so that's the thing. He wants, it goes away. He doesn't want, it comes. Like this. That's the nature of energy. You know?
But if, you know, it's like to really catch him, that we don't want something, is that if we want it for Krishna, and then in Krishna's service,
that's it. Yeah. If we want it for Krishna's service, but then we have to see is that why do we want that for Krishna's service and not something else? Right? Because generally it's connected with our conditioned nature. Like that. So therefore, if there's any attack, Krishna may put something there so that it's just purely for Krishna. And naturally, it will happen according to the nature. Yudhishthira Maharaj gets everything as a king because he's playing the part of a king. You know, Prabhupada gets everything as a preacher because he's playing that part as a preacher. So we'll come in that line, but it has to be when there's no attachments like that. That's the difficulty. For Krishna, this problem of wanting and it goes away, for him gives pleasure. Right? Because he's actually male. But the living entities aren't. They're trying to be male. So it frustrates them because they're not actually. So if they just take the position as servant, then however it goes, then they're happy with it. Whatever's the situation, it goes nicely. So that's why the living entity, you can't get the situation where you can't have your cake and eat it. Like that. Because only Krishna can do that, but he doesn't find happiness in that. He finds happiness in having the difficulty on attaining. Like that. So for the living entity, then by nature, then they just have to go along with the plan. Then it works for them. So when there's no attachment, then it'll just come. It may not even be noticed. It'll be noticed afterwards. Like that. That's why it says there should not be happiness or elation in happiness or a disturbance in distress. That means happiness will come. You'll be happy doing this. You taste some prasad. It's nice. You're happy. But there's no elation. You know, like that. You know, like that. So that's the thing. It's Krishna's. Is that okay?
Yeah, just so remarkable, the intensity of Srila Prabhupada's desire. For instance, to have his books distributed all over the world. Like very intense. At least that's my perception. And I haven't actually been with him at the time, but there's a feeling of intensity. Distributing books. It comes from him. So, I guess that's the point I'm making when we look at that the desire is transformed. You know, you think the material, but then it's transformed into purely spiritual, and the full facility of the times will come.
Because it's his Guru Maharaj's desire.
Right.
So his desire is that, therefore that intensity. But if it's his Guru Maharaj's, it's just like, there's so many, he got that order. And we have so many different orders that could be taken. So many different aspects. Prabhupada's given unlimited aspects within ISKCON to engage everybody in devotional service. So anybody could come and take an aspect as an order of Prabhupada, but we'll choose one generally connected with our conditioned nature. So there may be a slight mix in the beginning, but when that mix goes away, the same thing will be done, and that intensity will actually be of a high quality. Then there'll be no problems.
In Ajapa, Lord Chaitanya's desire is the same.
He didn't say again?
Because Lord Chaitanya's desire is the same, that's why it becomes so overwhelmingly successful.
Yeah. It means it all comes back to, basically everything's coming back to Lord Chaitanya. That, you know, Sri Chaitanya Mano Bhishtam Sapitam Jaina Bhutale, is that Lord Chaitanya wants this mission, and so then Rupa and all the others are trying to help establish it. So it's definitely the just, yeah.
And what is the difference
of
taking away money from the non-devotee?
Non-devotee, okay. Taking away from the devotee and non-devotee. The difference is that from the devotee, it's so that he gets rid of the material attachments that make him forget Krishna. And for the non-devotee, it's actually the same thing. It's to help him remove the desires and that to take him away from Krishna. But since he's not interested in Krishna, it simply takes away the desires that would be sinful. You know, because that's the thing, is there's an overlap here, is that material world sinful is, you're taking material and good and bad of material. They're both bad. But it's good and bad. You know, just like you go into the bathroom. And okay, the whole thing smells. But okay, this part doesn't smell as much as that part. So this part's nice and that part's not. But it's all bad. So then the material then being focused only on that will say this, the part of the bathroom that's not nicely, you know, smelling, that's bad. And the part that's doesn't smell so bad, that's good. So that's one definition of pious and impious. But the actual pious and impious means, pious means out of the bathroom, and impious means in the bathroom. So just within impiety, material impiety, being in the material world, then you can say something is progressive, means it's material but it moves towards Krishna, though you don't know you're moving towards Krishna, and the other is moving away from Krishna, so that's called impious. Right? The demigods move towards Krishna, and then when they get to the top of the pile, then they fall over the other side, and then they come back down, and then they become the demons, and then slowly, slowly they come up, and it's samsara. So it's progressive, but then they get to the top, then it goes down. But Krishna consciousness is just going out, so they use the same path, but they don't turn there, they keep going. Okay.
Yeah. In relationship to Janmashtami's question, this idea of getting and losing and taking and wanting and not wanting, what really blows me out about this story, and often you see this in other stories in the Srimad Bhagavatam, but about 6 or 7 verses back, there's like a thorough condemnation of family life spoken by Balamara. And yet when we see the whole story winds up, he's with his family again on the planet, you know, down there at Sataloka, and the idea is that now that he's being given, you know, like an amazing facility to live with his family and worship the Lord. And then, you know, you can see this in other pastimes too. For example, Dhruva Maharaj at the very end, he's about ready to get on the flowered airplane. He says, hey, I'm not going back without my mommy. You know, I want my mommy to come back with me too. So, you know, you see this condemnation of family life over and over again in the Srimad Bhagavatam, and then you see these people who are considered absolutely, totally pure devotees, completely to the 100th degree, turning around at the last point of liberation and say, I want my mom to come with me. So I find, and then we see here this condemnation of family life, and then Palad Maharaj, which is his grandfather, comes along and he kind of helps the situation. This is a family connection, and yet this thorough commendation of family life is given. So sometimes I wonder when I read these stories, like, how serious is this commendation if these absolutely recognized pure devotees are turning around and saying, I want my mother to come with me. Here's my grandfather. Can you please help me in this situation? Et cetera, et cetera.
The whole thing comes down, it's all what's called dharma. Right? It's nature. What is the religion of something? So when there is a misunderstanding, it's condemned. If it's not misunderstood, then it's favorable. In other words, there's nothing unfavorable if it's connected to the Lord. But unless one understands the dharma, just saying one knows is not enough. You know, it's just like anybody can come in and say, yes, I know how to do this or know how to do that. But they actually have to know. So the difficulty is the facilities of the material world are misused by the living entity for his own purposes. Like that. It's just like you have money, what's it for? It's supposed to be used for Narayan. It's supposed to be used for Krishna. So if we don't use it for Krishna, that's wrong. But how we can use it for Krishna, there's unlimited ways. So it's not how it's being used, it's the mentality by which it's being done. That was the thing before of this taking away and giving. If the mentality is wrong, it's taken away. If the mentality is right, it's given. The spiritual world is the most unlimitedly wealthy.
But how can you have and not want to have? The two things seem to be like psychologically. In other words, if I don't want my family, I don't want them. And if I want them, I want them. It's not like
because that's material. That's material life.
It's impossible to want and not want at the same time.
That's spiritual life. So this is the key. You'll find this point is constantly being discussed. This is the key. If you can catch this, you actually have how to operate the spiritual system. This is the thing. Material world, because I want the result, I endeavor for it. I don't want the result, I don't endeavor for it. That's karma and jnana. That's what we've been doing for as long as we've been in the material world. But devotional service is different from that. Devotional service is, I do it simply because I'm supposed to, because it pleases Krishna. And my actual purpose is not to please Krishna. That will please me. So I'm doing this activity because this is the activity that should be done. Though it's done in an obligatory, unattached way. This is explained in the end of the second chapter of Gita. Many verses there Prabhupada gives this. So this duty is it's supposed to be done, so it's done. And because it's done, it's according to Krishna's direction, therefore, and it pleases Krishna, therefore we're pleased. That's what gives the happiness. Material nature won't give us the happiness. So if we're thinking family life will give us happiness, then it's condemned, because it won't. It's never given anybody any happiness, and no one's ever come through it, you know, and survived. So the whole thing is that, but we see what is the conditioned nature. Means in ashram there's four conditioned natures. Right? And some of them progress through, and some of them you can avoid. So if someone has the conditioned nature, that accordingly their subtle body and their gross body is the need of it, is the grihastha ashram to fulfill the aspects of it, then grihastha ashram is supposed to be done as a duty. It's what one's supposed to do for that nature. And so in that means then there'll be husband and wife and children and house and wealth and all these things, because you need those things to run the ashram. But you have to run it how Krishna says it should be run. You know, so he says, what is a grihastha? You know, like that. How the husband deals with the wife with husband, this and that. Because the exchange is not between the souls. The grihastha, the husband and wife, dealing as husband and wife, you're not dealing with the souls. You're dealing with the subtle and gross bodies. The souls are interacting on the platform is that we want to get back to Godhead. We have conditioned nature that we have some attachments for. And so those attachments we can mutually work together to overcome. So the man has the attachments as the husband, the woman has the attachments as the wife. You know, at least this is the tradition. And then by working together, they can engage those attachments in Krishna's service and purify them. And so that's the thing. The camaraderie is on the devotional level of engaging that. But if they drop down into just the engagement of how to make this and that, that aspect, purely on its own, that this will make me happy. If we can work out this problem or make that or, you know, get the child this or, you know, so many things, then that is what's condemned. So, therefore, the first step is you go from sinful into pious, because at least then it looks like what is the normal way of dealing between living entities. But then, within that, then you have to change the mentality that I'm doing this actually because this is the way Krishna wants it. Krishna wants the husband to behave in this way with the wife. You know, to protect, to be kind, to be give direction, you know, to fulfill her needs. He wants the wife to behave in this way. You know, he wants the children to behave in this way. You know, children should be educated like this. They should be fed like this. You know, the house should be kept like this. You know, so many things are directions are there because Krishna wants it that way. You have to use it. Just like you have a hand, you use it how Krishna says hand should be used. So in the same way, we use it like that. If one finds one conditions nature is such that one doesn't have those needs, they've been dealt with in a previous life. And so then one doesn't need to engage that ashram. So therefore, it doesn't matter whether you're engaging the grihastha ashram or not, or worldly facilities or not. It's whether your nature should be engaging them or not. That's the thing. So if it is, then how much facility is necessary as long as one doesn't become entangled or bewildered? If one becomes bewildered, Krishna will take it away. And when one learns a lesson, he'll give it back. So it's progress on the spiritual path. The problem is that there's an overlap. See, that overlap, that is the tatasta. Right? You're overlapping the living entity, which is spiritual, and the material energy, which is material. So to get those to combine, that's the potency of the tatasta shakti. So there's an overlap. So when we can understand that overlap and work in it, then we can get out of this situation and get under the protection of the Hladini Shakti. Then it's iron and fire. That's the thing. Is that we can see, okay, there's fire and there's iron. But iron, when it's put into fire, becomes like fire, though it's still iron. So that's the thing, is material things engaged in the Lord's service become spiritual. Though they act like material energy. So the same way with our conditioned nature, the gross body, the subtle body, and all that, we have to learn how that overlap, that it looks material, but if it's done according to Krishna's direction, it's not. But it has to be done according to Krishna's direction. It can't be speculative. That's the key. That's why this word, this point of Niyamagraha is stressed. Because if you take it that, well, performing the Dharma, that's the real thing, that gets the result. No, no material arrangement can get any spiritual result. The same time as, oh, we don't deal with this material, you know, why are we only the bhav, right? Then that's also stupid. Because the point is you're conditioned, you're attached to these things, and if you don't do it here, you do it there. Right? The sahajas, they give up their house and this and that, we're detached, we're renounced, and then they travel around with some, you know, babajini. And they do jugal bhajan. So they're not going to get away from it. They're not going to get away from it. So therefore, you engage it. So that's the whole thing of Arjuna. The whole dilemma of Arjuna is he is going out on the battlefield to fight for himself. He's going to perform his kshatriya duties to his best of ability, but the result is his, and the endeavor is his, and the, you know, like that. So then Krishna comes and points out he's a fool. And he starts explaining the spiritual path. So then Arjuna goes, wow, this is great, so I don't want any of this, I'll go to the forest. And then Krishna says, no, you know, the conclusion is you're going to fight. So then, after this nice spiritual explanation, then Arjuna then opens the third chapter with this point of your instruction seems to be contradictory. Right? So Krishna's point is that, no, you're fighting for yourself. That's wrong. You have to fight for me. So what he's going to do, you know, as a Kshatriya, and how he's going to fight is going to be exactly the same as if he was doing it for himself. But he's changed the mentality. Now he's doing it because Krishna wants. The result of that war he doesn't want, but Krishna wants it. So therefore he does it. And he wants a nice big family sitting there in Hastinapur and enjoying themselves. Krishna wants all the demons killed. And so Arjuna is the medium through which they're going to be killed. Like that. So then therefore now he does the same thing. And now the result is Krishna's. So then it becomes wonderful.
Yeah. We look at back in Thakur's life. And he had a very, very big family. Look at the biography. Every calculation he made was how he could serve Krishna better. Where, you know, even in his professional occupation, you know, he opted to be in Puri anyway, everything was centered around him. What is it? Manasa Deho, Deho, Yogi, Jimo, Kimo. Everything was his. Everything that was in so-called his possession was in Krishna's service.
Yeah.
And so then we don't see Krishna taking anything away. He's just giving him more and more facility to serve in that way. And anything I've ever heard about him in the past word, his perhaps the situation was fully glorified.
Mm-hmm. It was taken away before. See, is that what he had before is... His situation living in his grandfather's house, they were super wealthy. He was the zamindar, so he was the biggest, wealthiest person.
Plate, right? It was like a whole
And then at 12 years, when he was 12 years old, his father, grandfather, all the relatives, any male relative, they were all killed. So there's a 12-year-old Bhaktivinoda Thakur, well, at that time, whatever, his mother and his unmarried sister. And so he went himself, took the both of them, went to Calcutta at 12, got a job, made money, arranged for his sister's marriage, paid everything there, and took care, and then slowly went up. So we see that it happened, but it just happened at a younger age. You know. Another point on this is that we also, there's the thing that we have, see, detachment... Doesn't mean, here's another thing, is real detachment is not being attracted to the thing. Being attached to enjoying the thing, not having the thing. That's also a very fine point. Because when you have, let's say, brahmacharis, sannyasis, or vanaprastas, and they're dealing also with detachment, but they're attached to detachment. Right? So that also has to be overcome. But because there's less things to deal with and it's becoming detached from the material world, it's considered progressive. Therefore, the Grihastha respects the Vanaprastas and Sannyasis because it's getting away from attachment to the material world. But the point is that's not Sat-Dharma, that's Dharma. That's moksha, that's liberation. But we're trying to go beyond into bhakti, which means you have to have attraction for Krishna. So ultimately, first it's that you're doing it because it's supposed to be done, but then it should be more prominent is because you want to please Krishna. You want to please Him. You want to develop attraction for Him, or you have attraction for chanting His holy name and all that. So therefore, everybody's just dealing with their particular attachments. Right? A sannyasi has nothing because he doesn't want to have it. It's too much trouble. You got to pay the bills, you got to take care of this, you got to do that. It's insanity. So therefore, they're attached to not having it. Right? Because then life is simple. Right? But for a grihastha, have nothing, then you have so many needs, it's a difficulty. You have to have something. Right? You want to raise a kid, you have to have a place to put the kid. Wife wants things protected, so then you have to have something to protect. Right? A tree is not necessarily the greatest spot. You know, like that. Parvati lives with it, you know, like that. But, you know, even she wanted a house, you know. But, you know that story?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, yeah, okay.
But, What I'm saying, I kind of missed your explanation. It went over my head.
It's subtle.
Yeah, it's too subtle for me. Because I'm not a very subtle guy. But here we have a Mahajan. He's praying at 6 verses back. I realize I don't want family, you're taking it all away from me, and I'm super happy. I'm overjoyed. I see now that this stuff is family, life, wealth, children, blah, blah, blah. They're all useless. I'm glad they're gone. And so now we're going to find, like, about 20 verses later that he gets it all back. So my question is, if that prayer was honestly sincere, why would he, when it comes back to him, why would he go, oh, great, now it's all back? Mm-hmm. See, this is, I can't understand this principle of having and not having both at the same time.
Yeah. It's like this, okay, let's try,
try just again.
Practical. Yeah, we'll try again. Okay, so you're a family man.
Okay.
Okay, so what is your wife?
What is my wife?
Yeah, what is your wife?
She's a spirit soul, part and parcel of Krishna.
Okay, so then a spirit soul is not withered by the wind, burnt by fire, dried by the air, or moistened by this and that. So therefore, because she's spirit soul, then there's no need to make any material arrangements, right? And she's happy.
But on
the practical level, in day-to-day life, you spend most of your day doing what?
Trying to make her happy.
Yeah, okay. So, that is the point.
Okay.
Is he's gone from seeing his wife as the gross and subtle body that he identifies as that's the wife, to actually seeing as the soul. But because his wife thinks she's the body, or she's within, even if she doesn't, she's within the body, that body has to be taken care of. Right? You understand? So whether you're taking care of a kamandalu, it has needs also. It has to be polished, you have to change the water and this and that, because that's the nature of a pot.
Right.
So the nature of a woman, then that has to be taken care of. So therefore, he's taking care of it from coming from the spiritual plat down rather than the material up.
Okay.
Does that make any sense?
That makes
sense.
Okay.
So then, Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivedanta ki, Jai Nitya Gaura Premanandi.